This is Tales from Agnes, 1972 flooding in the Chemung Valley, presented by the Arts Council of the Southern Finger Lakes to commemorate the 40th anniversary of the 1972 flood. Episode 3, Strandedness and Salvation. The arrival of Hurricane Agnes in New York caused tremendous flooding and massive damage. It also thrust victims into compromising life-or-death situations. In several cases, residents were forced to struggle for their own survival. Some would not make it, but the support and integrity of the social fabric brought many out of the disaster still breathing. In this episode, flood survivors tell tales of harrowing circumstances and the individuals who succeeded in salvaging pieces of their lives and rescuing others who were stranded. The floodwaters brought disaster not only to the people of the valley, but the possessions of those who were high and dry. Beth Walter Honadel lived with her family in Caton, but they owned and operated a dry cleaning business in Elmira. Despite the rising of the floodwaters, there was one possession they risked their lives to save.
My father and brother had gone downtown to rescue a wedding gown that they had cleaned for several generations for one family. And my father and brother were, as we understand it, the last two people that the authorities allowed to cross the bridge from the south side to the north side of the river because the water was coming up. And my parents had, on their first anniversary, experienced the flood in 1945, and so my father thought that it would be like that. And they went in and they rescued the wedding gown and then took the rest of the cleaning that was hanging on the hangers in the business, and they put them up over the rack, up over the pipe, thinking that that would protect them from the floodwaters as it had done in 1945. But of course, this time it came up 6 feet on the first floor. And by the time they came out of the business, the flood water was starting to come up over the tire of the dry cleaning van, the delivery van that we own. And they could not come back, so they continued on they went to West Elmira, high on a hill, to visit with a friend, and that's where they stayed during the flood. And my father called my mother, and she and I were fine, high and dry here on our out in Caton. And during the conversation, he said that they were safe and where they were, and then the phone went click, and there was no communication. We didn't have communication with them for days, but at least we knew they were safe.
Beth Honadel's family recognized how important an article of clothing, such as a bridal gown, can be to an individual. However, they may not have realized the extent of the danger involved in saving it. Single items could not compare to the total devastation some experienced. Jane Spellman of Corning was out of town as her home was demolished. It was up to her friends to rescue what they could of her possessions.
I was out of town at the time, and my apartment was flooded up to 14 feet and, in fact, torn off its foundations and washed four blocks down the street where it was stuck between the dike and a telephone pole. Very fortunately, otherwise it would have floated away down the Chemung River. Many of the contents of the apartment were lost in that four-block transition, but the contents of the kitchen cupboards and the bedroom and a storage area were still there. I was out of town and remained out of town until a week after the actual flood, but the staff of the Corning Museum of Glass, who were busy where I worked, who were busy fixing up the flood at the museum, took time out to find my apartment and to take everything that was left that was salvageable out of it to their houses and clean it up and salvage it for me so that when I came back to town 2 weeks later, as much as possible was saved.
Those who were insightful enough to understand the coming catastrophe felt all the more obligated to protect their businesses and institutions from sure annihilation. William J. Misnick Sr. was employed at the Ingersoll Rand Foundry then, and on the evening prior, he was rallied by his boss, Arthur Johnson, to come and help save the foundry. So, taking a thermos of coffee and a dozen donuts with him, he traveled to Painted Post in order to batten down the hatches of the factory.
As we walked through the foundry, took off my shoes, my socks, I was in my bare feet, walking through the sand, I was already up to my knees, and finally we got to the back of the foundry, which would be the southern part of the building, the eastern section. There was a little platform there. I said, all right, this is where I got to go up the ladder and turn off the main gas line. And I says, here, watch my thermos and my boots, my head engineer boots on. High ones, probably 9-inch high boots. I put them on a pallet there and turned off the gas line and got back down. I says, all right, where's my boots and where's my donuts? Well, they floated away. And luckily, I looked near the fence line, and both of my boots were floating there along with the donuts. So I went out into the water and got those. Of course, my wallet got saturated. Then we all climbed to the roof. And at that point, it was Art Johnson, myself, who was manager of engineering and maintenance and the plant engineer at the foundry at the time, and Mr. West was a security guard, and he had a heavy, dark, black raincoat on. We headed to the roof, and there we were till about 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon. Of course, we were warm because we were near the ventilator, and the heat was coming up through the ventilators to keep us warm. But we were looking across the valley and watching the water rise, homes floating down the Chemung River. Could see the intersection of where Chemung River and Cohocton and the Tioga River all came in there and painted post. And we were counting concrete blocks on the building to see what the rate of rise was. So that kept us occupied.
William Misnick was not the only resident to be stranded. For some, it would become a living nightmare. John Kingley, who was fire chief in Gang Mills, was out on a call with his partner, Hobart Abbey, when disaster struck. Susan Harris, Kingley's daughter, tells their story.
My father was the fire chief of the Forest View Gang Mills Fire Department in 1972 at the time of the flood, and Hobart was, I believe, the assistant. They were in a rescue vehicle called a brush buggy when they were swept away. And they were in a certain area of Gang Mills near Forest Drive. My father spent the night on a clinging to a rooftop and calling for Hobart all through the night and into the next day. I guess he was stuck on this roof for more than one day while they could be rescued. 2 days later, when the water receded, was when Hobart was found. Hobart had drowned, apparently, that first night. But that's a story that I wanted to record. There's a park in Gang Mills on Beartown Road in honor of the two of them. It's the Abbey Kingley Memorial Park.
Hobart would be just one of 18 lives lost in the Chemung Valley because of flooding, adding to the already high death toll of Agnes. It is incredible to think how many more would have perished in the Chemung Valley if it weren't for the heroic efforts of people like Mary Ellis Chase. She had been working as a nurse at St. Joe's in Elmira and was boated into the hospital in the middle of the flood to assist in the evacuation and care of patients.
When we got into the hospital, we were put to work to let the kids that had been there since 11 o'clock the night before. We got there about, I think it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and we were put to work to relieve those people. So we did as much as we could for the patients. We had doctors that had also gotten in by boat who were doing wonderful work with no electricity. We couldn't suction patients and stuff like that, and they were going around and helping us do that. The National Guard were there, and they were, you couldn't say enough good things about these guys. They chair carried every patient, and in those days, not only did we have a 10-bed ICU, a 4-bed coronary care unit, we had pediatrics, we had a full maternity, we had brand new infants and moms. They chair carried every patient down to the first floor where they could get onto the heliport to be evacuated by helicopter.
The National Guard proved a pivotal force in the rescue and security of victims. However, there were those outstanding citizens who took rescue upon themselves when the opportunity arose. William Misnick continues, he and his companions still stranded on the roof of Ingersoll Rand in Painted Post.
Finally, about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we heard a voice from the east side of the building, and there was a man in a canoe. Excuse me, not a canoe, a flat-bottom boat. And he said, want to be rescued? We said, sure. So we crawled down the ladder and got in his boat. And so there was 3 of us plus the operator of the boat. I said, what are you doing out here? Oh, my wife sent me out to get the cat. So he lived in one of those Ingersoll Rand former Painted Post Development Company homes. And so we went on the other side. We were at the back entrance on Chemung Street at the time. So we went around through the homes there to the alley and got to Brainerd Place, equal to about a half a block away. So a mailbox was floating by, and he got out of the boat, and I said, here, take this mailbox. And while the house is locked, I said, here, take this mailbox and break the glass. Now, he decided to use his fist. He figured he'd hit the window and break the glass before he could get out and reach in there. So, unfortunately, he cut himself, so we had some clean hankies. We bandaged him up. We had to, made sure our only survivor who could know how to use a boat in good standings, which was his. So he went in the house, and he ended up coming out with a cat. I said, here, Art, you take that cat. And then he said, well, there's one more up there. It's not declawed. I said, well, go up and get it. Mr. West, the security guard, he has a heavy, dark raincoat on. The cat won't scratch him. So we then got that one. I looked next door to the duplex house. There was a cat hanging on the screen, all fours. I says, go get that cat. So he did. And so I ended up holding that cat. Finally, we rode down the Brainerd Place, and telephone lines, TV cables were so low to the water level that we had to raise the cables with a stick in order to, we found a stick floating, grabbed it, and pushed up the cables so we could get the boat underneath. Finally, we got at the intersection of Brainerd Place and Rand Avenue, and a little old lady howling from the upstairs window. Well, we later heard that, someone wanted to rescue her, but she refused to go. Don't recall her name, but anyway, I held on to the eave trough of the home while this individual who operated the boat went up the slope of the roof and pulled her out of the window and got her in the boat. Got her nicely comfortable in the boat. She said, may I go back into the house and get my knitting? So sure enough, she went back in the house and got her knitting. We got her back in the boat. Finally, we got to land in front of the Painted Post fire station, and Art said, come up my home and see if we got some dry clothes for you, because I was saturated from walking in the water there. So anyway, I never knew who this man was. Not knowing, he was a young engineer at Ingersoll Rand, too, but I didn't have the opportunity to meet him. It wasn't until 20 years later, I was at the VFW in Corning, and this man was by the name of Dale Tones. And he's the one that rescued us. So I was very fortunate. So we got to be friends, but that 12-foot aluminum boat certainly did the job. He had a pile of cushions in it, and it made it a little comfortable for us. So, I remember the little old lady's name, Mrs. Burmington. She lived on Brainerd Place, yeah. It was certainly quite an experience for us, and of course, as the story goes, 4 men, a little old lady, and 3 cats in our little 12-foot rowboat.
Despite their losses, the communities of the valley proved themselves to be integrous and supportive in a time of chaos. Those who had the fortune to survive the flood will always remember the generosity and goodwill, as well as the sad loss of too many lives, the day Agnes struck the Chemung Valley. Next week, Tales from Agnes continues, with tales of singular people and unbelievable circumstances that stood out in the time of the flood. Tales from Agnes is produced by Trevor Worthy and Connie Sullivan Bloom, in collaboration with the Arts Council of the Southern Finger Lakes. Special thanks to the New York State Council on the Arts, a state agency, the Community Foundation of Elmira Corning and the Finger Lakes, Caitlin O'Leary, and the dozens of community members who contributed their stories.